Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer. SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting.
Than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience.
With Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Do you have a dark curiosity? Follow and listen to Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Dawn Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the free Odyssey app.
I had reported to you, and I'll read some local headlines just to refresh your memory. This was about a University of Pennsylvania assistant professor under fire. One headline, this is the New York Post, more of a right-leaning publication, obviously owned by the same company as Fox News. Quote, socialist UPenn professor hides social media after celebrating the alleged UnitedHealthcare CEO's assassin. Another one, this is NBC 10, this is locally. UPenn teacher apologizes after her comments. And so that was, perhaps you'd say that's more fair. But this one has split people as far as what should happen here. We know that this assistant professor apologized profusely, but now we have an attorney. This is Alex Morey joining us today, talking about and representing FIRE, concerned that Penn is investigating this assistant professor and media studies professor, Julia Alexeyeva, for her recent social media post regarding the murder suspect and the murder. And so let's bring her in. Alex, it's great to have you here. So,
hi, good morning, John.
Hi, good morning. I hope you could hear me, but I was kind of relaying some of the headlines people hear locally, especially in Philadelphia and some of the Pennsylvania and New York East Coast stations, the headlines, whether they were calling this UPenn professor a socialist or whether they were supporting or criticizing or just saying, oh, good thing she apologized. But you have written now a letter. You've penned a letter to President Jameson at the UPenn locally at University of Pennsylvania. Tell us why and why you think that the investigation into this assistant professor is the wrong thing to do.
Yeah, so at FIRE, we're a nonpartisan organization trying to get people to have these debates when controversies come up rather than empowering, you know, folks in the government or administrators at universities like the University of Pennsylvania to decide which views are debatable. And so what we worry about, whether it's a professor like, you know, Julia Alexeyeva saying controversial things that are seen as socialist or leftist that people are criticizing, or whether it's someone like Amy Wax, who has had controversial views mm-hmm. that people have said are, you know, too conservative or on the right, we don't want Penn deciding which conversations get to be had on campus or which faculty are allowed to, you know, have certain views, even if they're controversial. Instead, at a university like Penn, you want, the whole spectrum of views, and then people will have those debates. And as we've seen in this situation, you know, Professor Alexeyeva is getting a lot of criticism. You know, having a First Amendment right to say controversial things doesn't mean you're free from criticism, but it should mean you should be free from punishment at a school that promises you First Amendment like free speech rights.
And so in this one, and I had reported it, just so you know, at the time, everybody reported it. She had, first of all, she deleted the post. It said, have never been prouder to be a professor at the University of Pennsylvania. That was part of it, but was referring to the accused killer. And so then apologized for it. Then UPenn released a statement saying that these are not our views, etc. And so I really thought, okay, that's the end of it. As somebody, I believe in free speech. She did not, to my knowledge, the statement, you know, that she made I was shocked by it. But I took her to be genuine when she said she was deeply sorry that she was more referring, as I recall, she was referring to the healthcare situation and not the tragedy at hand. But in this case, is that your argument? You know, let this play out and accept somebody's apology, accept somebody's viewpoint, have the conversation. Take me through, you know, why in particular you're supporting this assistant professor.
Yeah, so, you know, what we like to see ideally from an institution like Penn when there's a controversy is a really robust restatement of that faculty member's rights. You know, instead, what we more frequently see from universities when they're under pressure is they hop right into, we're going to investigate. You know, it gives them sort of cover, suggesting, you know, we're going to do something about this when they're getting pressure from folks who dislike the faculty member's speech. What we'd like to see instead is, you know, this is protected speech. You know, our faculty can say whatever they like, and they may be criticized for it, but Penn is not going to, you know, punish them or investigate in any way, because, of course, investigations alone are very chilling, right? If you're a faculty member, especially an adjunct, you know, with a contract that might go away at the end of the year, you don't want to be under investigation. That's going to shut someone up. So what concerned us most here was a statement by one of the Pennsylvania representatives, Dan Muser, suggesting that he had spoken to someone or someone's at Penn and that Penn had assured them that they, you know, were investigating. And so that's what we're concerned about. We, you know, if Professor Alexieva is apologizing and saying, you know, I'm sorry, and that's sort of a genuine reflection on her part, fine. But if that apology is coming under duress from Penn, if Penn has exerted any level of, you know, pressure on her, then, you know, that is very concerning. We want these debates to be happening in an unfiltered way, and not having folks at Penn that purport to love free speech instead putting their thumb on the scale one way or another and saying some views just aren't acceptable for professors to express.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, they also, there were, and this assistant professor wasn't the only one. There was the Columbia University professor, and I reported this before, but Anthony Zenkis was also being slammed for mocking this whole murder, and that one I think got a whole lot, you know, that had millions of views, saying today we mourn the death of United Healthcare CEO Brian Thompson, gunned down. Wait, dot dot dot. I'm sorry. Today we mourn the deaths of 68,000 Americans who needlessly die each year, so that insurance company execs like Brian Thompson can become millionaires. I mean, that's obviously, I mean, to me, geez, the guy, you know, he's gunned down on the street. He's got two sons and a wife. It's pretty apathetic, to say the least. So, is this more of an issue? Let me just ask you this: is this more of an issue of a lack of a policy and train? I'm from a background of a broadcaster. There are certain things that if I say them on air or even off air and I'm quoted to a publication, I will be fired. And I work in talk radio now, and my career you know, started for decades in television news. I was trained. I signed documents as to what I could and could not say. And I can tell you there were things that if I said, I would have been fired. Had nothing to do with free speech, had to do with my contract. Do you know what I'm saying? So if you
know, and you know what? Faculty have a really unique role in our society, and so we like to give them more freedom to, you know, speak their minds, particularly when it's on issues of public concern or when they are speaking about something that, you know, might be adjacent to their, you know, their field of expertise. Now, you know, if you're the CEO of, you know, Pepsi, or you're a broadcaster, you're going to sign a contract when you are employed and say, you know, I'm going to, you know, speak about X, Y, and Z. But when you're a faculty member, there are certain things for which you are paid to teach. But we also sort of accept, as because, you know, academic freedom is a special concern of the First Amendment, we have to give faculty a little bit more freedom to speak about issues of public concern, because we want them to have, you know, the utmost ability to talk about the issues of the day, even if they say controversial things. That really infuses the campus free expression climate with, you know, with this freedom to have these unfiltered debates. We don't want faculty to be worried about, you know, gosh, am I going to have my contract non-renewed, or am I going to get pressure from a legislator, or is the administration not going to like this if I say X, Y, and Z? Now, something like what Professor Alexeyeva said might be, you know, on the edge of the spectrum, but it's still fully protected. And by protecting professors who say things like she did, or like Amy Wax, who has said other controversial things that are seen as more right, then we give all the faculty within the free expression climate this assurance that whatever they might say is not going to come under undue scrutiny. And that's the kind of climate we want. Again, doesn't insulate folks like Amy Wax or Yulia Alexeyeva from this kind of criticism that they're getting, but it tells faculty, it tells us as people who rely on information coming out of institutions like Penn, that there are not, you know, nefarious things going on with administrators or legislators or, you know, undue pressure from the outside that's influencing the kind of information that we're getting out of these institutions.
Yeah. I know we have to pivot to TikTok, Alex. I could talk, you know, part of me, and there were things that Amy Wax has said that to me are just boneheaded. This assistant professor, you know, this was just, you know, this is a murder. And it was, to me, it deserves, I don't know if it deserves an investigation, but I think for me, there are people who say things and they're in a position of authority. And it's not really a debate. It's not in a class. It's more of that you're on social media and you have the potential to, you're representing, you know, University of Pennsylvania, an Ivy League school with an incredible reputation. So I would push back. I mean, I agree that I celebrate and obviously I fight for free speech every day. On the other hand, I would say the universities, maybe they're not a TV station or a broadcasting entity. My feeling on this one is maybe they need some on-the-job training with people and remind them that when you go on social media, you are standing on a platform that has the potential to reach hundreds of millions of people. And you're not just defining what you think, but when you represent and your email is, or your TikTok or whatever, your X account, it identifies you as a UPenn professor, you represent UPenn. Do you know what I'm saying? So at the very least, I think this does deserve some training with individuals. Just be appropriate.
Yeah, you know, there are definitely professionalism norms within universities. And what's really interesting, you know, what we see a lot at FIRE is those professionalism standards abused. You know, whenever a controversy pops up, an administrator just says, you're being unprofessional, whether it's someone expressing a conservative view or a socialist view or whatever. So certainly there are professionalism norms within academia, but given the highly polarized climate that we're in right now, we haven't really found, you know, we haven't really seen a good way for administrators to, you know, to use those standards in a way that is not just punishing controversial speech. Yeah. But absolutely, that is a question right now facing higher ed.
Alex, I could talk to you all day. We need to pivot to our next guest, but I hope you come back. Thank you so much. Really appreciate your time. Absolutely, with FIRE. And
what
look,
a rock star she is,
yeah,
huh?
She's awesome. And it's, I just, you know, I go back and forth on this one because on one hand, you know me, I believe in free speech. We need to open debate, especially because I was an adjunct professor, as you know, locally at LaSalle University. To get college students to open up sometimes is difficult. They don't really want to talk about these controversial issues, so you don't want to shut it down. But if you represent the University of Pennsylvania, I mean, you got to be appropriate. Yeah. And like I say, on both sides, I think, you know, Amy, whether it's Amy or whether it's the assistant professor, both of them, that was boneheaded. I can say both of them on the right, the left, boneheaded. Apathetic. Be best.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino
and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Casino.
From the trusted team behind 48 Hours, welcome to Case by Case, your weekly update on the biggest true crime stories unfolding right now.
Nick Reiner remains in custody without bail.
Luigi Mangione accused of stalking and gunning down United Healthcare CEO Brian Thompson.
From high-profile trials and stunning evidence to major breaks in cold cases, we'll follow it all case by case. Follow and listen to 48 Hours Case by Case wherever you get your podcasts.
I really love this organization and what they're doing right now. Freedom of speech is incredibly important, especially when censorship becomes huge. But, Dawn, there's an issue that I kind of have an issue with FIRE right now, and that's the whole situation on the ban on TikTok. Because here on air, I've been saying for a while that I think TikTok being ran by a nefarious government. Yeah, sorry. Thank you for the grammatical correction. I think it's a detriment to our youth, our younger generation. But FIRE's doing some work now in the Supreme Court to overturn that ban. And I wanted to bring on the Director of Public Advocacy at FIRE, Aaron Turr, who's going to be joining us now to talk about that subject as well, Dawn.
Aaron, thanks for being here. So we could have spent so much time with both you and Alex. So thanks for coming on. And we're really giving people such a broad spectrum of all these different issues. But this is about the nationwide ban on TikTok. It's before the Supreme Court. Take me through your thought process, if you would. Hey, Aaron.
Hey, yeah. And thanks for having me on. So our thought process on the TikTok case is that, so this law that targets TikTok and potentially other apps and websites with connections to foreign governments is really unprecedented. It's the first time in history that the U.S. government has singled out and effectively banned a medium of communication. And the government has made no secret of the fact that one of the law's main purposes is to shield Americans from ideas and viewpoints it doesn't want us to see. And that's just never a legitimate reason to regulate speech. The core purpose of the First Amendment is to prevent that kind of paternalistic move by the government to control the information landscape from dictating what we can say and what information and ideas we can listen to and evaluate for ourselves, regardless of their source. So the argument here isn't that we shouldn't worry about China and how it could undermine our national security. It's just that when the government takes the dramatic step of shutting down a platform for expression and restricting the speech rights of 170 million Americans who use that platform, it has to prove that such a restriction is necessary to address an extremely serious and immediate danger, right? And the government just hasn't made that case here. It hasn't put up the evidence. And the court essentially said, that's fine, we trust you, but that's not how it's supposed to work, not when fundamental rights like free speech are at stake.
And so for this, and by the way, if it were about Eurovision, I remember that movie Eurovision, and I never knew about that big song contest that's in the Scandinavian countries, I believe, but mm-hmm. I never knew that existed. At the time, I said, why can't we see that? Now, I guess now, starting recently, Americans can see that kind of thing. So on one hand, I would love to open that communication up and see what other countries are doing, especially when it comes to things like you're saying, free speech, especially music and the arts, I think could be incredible. But as far as this goes, so wait a minute, are you on the same side then as Trump? Because we heard recently that President-elect Trump said, maybe I'm not against TikTok because it helped me in the last election. I'm trying to figure this out here.
Well, look, I mean, if President Trump's position is that TikTok shouldn't be banned now, then yeah, we agree with him to that extent. You know, I don't know if our reasons for opposing the ban are exactly line up with his. But you can interpret that in kind of a broader way to say that TikTok is an important and distinctive platform for speech in the U.S. that isn't, you know, it has this reputation, right, for just being about silly teens dancing. But it's also used by millions of Americans for political advocacy, right? Both presidential candidates started using it this last summer. My organization and many other advocacy organizations like ours use it to spread our message out there and reach a younger audience. People use it to consume news, for political content, for arts and entertainment. So it's such a serious infringement on the rights of so many Americans to use the platform of their choice to speak, to put out their message and to receive information and ideas.
So the one thing I would say, and I will tell you, because one of my teenage sons had actually said, you know, I look at sometimes the funny dancing and little bits on TikTok, but stays away from it, and was the first one to tell me, Mom, have you seen TikTok in this country as opposed to TikTok, very different, in China? And that brings up another issue, because is it another country? Is it free speech, or is it another country that's a communist country, a competitor, enemy, whatever you want to say, trying to influence young people in very different ways than the format? The format there is very different than it is here. And then the other issue is, as far as communism, and should they be allowed to in any way indoctrinate American youth? That's the that's one of the arguments, right?
That's one of the arguments. So one of the government's arguments is that the TikTok may be manipulating content on the platform in the U.S., so affecting what U.S. users can see, or that the Chinese government may be coercing TikTok to manipulate content. Now, the first thing to note about that is that the government actually conceded a lack of specific intelligence that China ever has actually manipulated TikTok's content in the U.S. And in fact, if the content is much different from what you see in China, that seems to suggest that it's not doing that, right? Because I would assume that the content they're seeing in China is the type of like propaganda that the government wants them to see.
Or we're just a bunch of idiots, and that's what I said to my son. I go, I hope it's not that, you know, but it's us American, you know, our American kids, this is the stuff they're doing.
I actually done a lot of research into this, and Douyin, the version that they showed, you know, Chinese citizens on TikTok, what they show them are, you know, community service kind of things, or they show them positive, you know, ideas to try to influence the younger generation into, you know, positive futures. Whereas there's been, you know, work done to show that the algorithms of TikTok instead, you know, are looking to diminish American society. Influencers now the number one, you know, thing that young people want to be. Whereas if you look at China, I think it's still astronaut, you know, as what they want to be. And I just see trash being fed to a younger generation on purpose in some kind of, you know, ideological subversion going on here. And I just wonder, do you guys sense that at all, or is that just not really even on the table?
So Aaron, the question here is, is it a reflection of our youth? Is it just a reflection of the youth there versus here, or is it by design and algorithm manipulated?
Well, so I think that's a good question, right? I think it could in part be a reflection. I think it also could be that these platforms try to drive engagement, and there's certain types of content that may drive engagement that some people might think is not, you know, the most productive or the most beneficial. But that debate can happen, right? I mean, there can be a debate over how TikTok should use its algorithm or curate content. But it ultimately, TikTok, regardless of the identity of its owner, itself is a private company headquartered in the United States, and therefore has a First Amendment right to curate content the same way that other platforms like X and Facebook, you know, and newspapers like the New York Times have that right. The government can't tell them how to display content to the public. And I would also go back to the point that the government conceded that it doesn't have evidence that Chinese government is forcing TikTok to display content in any particular way. And I think the more important point here, though, from a First Amendment perspective, is that the record is clear that the government's concerns about so-called content manipulation are at bottom concerns about propaganda and foreign influence, about Americans' access to perceived to content and viewpoints presented on TikTok, and the government trying to control Americans' information diet, saying, we don't trust you to do it ourselves. And, you know, when it comes to kids, we don't trust parents to supervise their kids and their social media use. Yeah. And again, the First Amendment stands against that type of paternalistic speech regulation. It prevents the government from trying to coddle us and protect us from speech that it thinks is misleading or manipulative, especially in the political realm, because we know how the government can abuse that power mm-hmm. and has abused that power in many other contexts. So I think one more point I'll just add here is that it's really important in any First Amendment case to really think beyond the specific facts of the case and the precedent that's being set and how the government can apply that precedent in other contexts and how it's being given, potentially be given, a really expansive power and control over American speech.
And so, Aaron, this goes before SCOTUS January 10th, right? Because the law otherwise would take effect January 19th. Yeah. Gee, something happens on the 20th. But as far as that's when they'll hear the arguments, they've accepted the emergency appeal. What do you have an expectation here as to what of what this court will do?
It's always really hard to predict. I think it'll probably be a close decision either way. But, you know, we were disappointed that, you know, we asked the court to at least pause the law while it could take time to consider the arguments on both sides and issue a really well thought out and considered opinion. But, for some reason it decided, no, we're not going to pause the law, but what we're saying to do is expedite this case, have lawyers file briefs around Christmas time, and then decide, have oral argument like a week later, and then decide the case a week after that. I don't think that's not the way I would do it. Yeah. I would want to do it if I was a Supreme Court justice, but, you know, that's what the court decided. And there, you can speculate about whether or not that indicates the court is, has a favorable disposition towards the law and the lower court's decision, or it doesn't. You can kind of argue it both ways, but it's really hard. It's always hard to predict, and we'll just see what happens.
Yeah, well, listen, I hope you come back. This is basically to us nerds who love the First Amendment and cherish it. That's really, I mean, the fact that they said to the lawyers, be ready. You're going to argue whether this law passed by Congress as a so-called ban violates the First Amendment. My thing is, this is a First Amendment court. I think they will go with the First Amendment. It will come down to the attorneys and their arguments. But they will go. I think they will vote for protecting the First Amendment before anything else. That's just my feeling and my
fingers
hope.
Fingers crossed. Yeah.
Please come back, Aaron Turr. You guys are great at FIRE and do great work. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Dawn Stensland from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.